Thank you, Grandma, for that lovely introduction. I think it was your son, actually, Brian, who told me never let the facts get in the way of a good story. And I think there might have been a little bit of that going on there. But it's true. When I was in Paris and Yvonne, we had a wonderful time. And I did find a great crepe place with a guy that was happy, it seemed, for me to stay there with him. But I did not want to. Hey, I'm really excited to be here this morning, and I'm going to try to get this thing happening. He said this morning, just pointed out that thing, and it'll happen, but I knew that would be it never actually goes like that. I said, hey, don't worry about it, you don't want to leave it on. I just got a few slides to show you, and I'm really excited to be here. I love coming back here, Pennsylvania. I grew up just down the road in Moorwood, as we like to refer to it, and I love coming back. I love sharing stories of camp. They said to you in 15 minutes. I said, how do you expect me to talk about camp in 15 minutes? But I'm going to do my best. But I have to be honest, I'm like pretty nervous. Share Grandma's sentiment of being nervous, and not just like any nervous, like excited nervous, like scared nervous. So just be aware. It's not that I'm like more nervous than I've been in a long time. In 2009, I signed myself up to teach a class at Keeney College of Vermont. I signed myself up. I went in and I said, "Hey, I'd be really good at this to teach this class now in physiology. I have this background. I have a master's." And I said, "Great. You should do it." And then I started preparing for the class, and I was like, I'm totally unqualified to teach this class. So I went to my first class, and I was like totally nervous, and my students were very gracious, and I'm still teaching there now. So on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I go to a community college in Vermont and teach. So that, I think, was the last time that I was this nervous in 2009. See, at this point, I'm pretty comfortable sharing in front of groups of people. It's a lot of what I spend my time doing, but normally I share Bible stories with children. So if it was really Evie and Omi in the room, all of you, that would be a lot more comfortable for me. Or I share anatomy and physiology with people 18 years and older. Most of my students are a lot older than I am. They're going back for a second career. And so this, looking out, I feel that you guys are really neither of those categories. So I feel a little bit out of my element. We're going to be just fine. Don't worry. So as I was thinking about what to say, what do I share about camp? What do I share about myself? What can I share to encourage people? I was really struck with being really excited at the opportunity and really scared to stand up here before you. And I realized as I was thinking about that to help my nervousness, one thing I could do was pretend that we were more like here. This is at Bethany Burgess Camp. And you can see, very easy for me to talk to kids that age. So I'm going to pretend that that's where we are. And also, in this place, I have learned a lot and met Jesus in many, many ways. And one of the ways that that's been happening most recently is by experiencing both, right? So here I am, nervous and excited, scared and excited. And I think when this happens, you see, my natural tendency is to pursue, like, recklessly the feeling that I'm excited about and that I feel comfortable with and that I know about, right? Like, someone close to me, I'm a very optimistic person, always been that way. And when I got married, my husband told me, you know, sometimes I think that you are so optimistic that you forget what reality actually is. I said, who doesn't? Like, isn't that what you're supposed to, like, isn't that how you live? And so I think, like, here I go pursuing optimism, right? Because reality, when you look out around, doesn't always seem so great, you know? And so why not look towards what's optimistic? Another example of both is I live in Vermont, right? And I like it there. For a long time, I did not like it there. Now I do like it there. It feels like home, and that's very good. But I will never be a Vermonter, right? Even though I live there, in that state, you have to be there for like 7 generations before they will classify yourself. Even if we have kids and they live there forever, they won't be Vermonters either. Like, it's just it's the culture. It's not, they don't really allow you to be a Vermonter. And so here I am in my home in Vermont. Now, everyone around me thinks of me as a foreigner, right? As a Flatlander. So this weird, and when I sit with that, right, and I want to say, like, well, fine, this isn't my home. I am a foreigner, and I don't really care, you know? But it is my home, right? So how do I be a foreigner and at home in the same place? So what I'd like to share a little bit this morning is how do we sit with both things? Because I think when we sit with both, right, when we hold both, whatever it is that you're experiencing, I have found that that is where I meet Jesus, and that is where I meet God, and that's what I would like to encourage you in this morning. So I'm going to share a few stories from camp, and I think they'll make a little bit more sense if you have a little bit of idea of where I'm coming from. So just, like, out of curiosity, a raise of hands, if you've ever been to any camp anywhere, just if you've ever been in a camp. Oh, excellent. I'm good company. And actually, I could say, if you've ever lived in a house with more than four or five people, sometimes camp feels like a little bit like that. You know? So again, most of you are probably familiar with this concept. And just again, out of curiosity, how many of you have been to Bethany Mercy Camp in Vermont, Central Vermont, a great place to go? Come. If you haven't, come. If you have, come again. It's really great. So I just want to show you a short video of kind of how I spend about 8 weeks in the summer and a few weekends in the winter, just to give you an idea of where I'm coming from. Wonderful, honest people, and they said, what? You don't know how to do that. But I said, oh, it'll be fine. We just play games and talk about God. No problem. And they're also very, they let us explore life and came beside us all the time as we fail sometimes. So my mom was telling me this, and I was like, I went to a Christian college. I didn't have any theological training. I like to be outside. I had never been to Vermont. I wasn't going to first aid training. I had been a counselor for one summer at a camp in Alaska and thought that qualified me to be a program director. And Brandon, at that time, we were just friends and we weren't married. And I told him I could be the program director, and he said, I don't think so. Like, you're a great person and we're good friends, but seriously, like, I need someone who knows what they're doing. And I said, well, you play games, you talk about God, how hard can this be? like, why is everyone getting so worked up about this? So I came there and I was pretty not qualified. And I'll never forget the very first Sunday, my very first Sunday, the first week of camp, we had had numerous parents ask us where the actual directors were because we were 22 at the time, and parents were leaving their children with us, we're 23. And I'll never forget the first Sunday when I saw, there's probably 30 kids there that week, came running up to the pavilion and rang the bell, and I said, oh my gosh, like, I have to do something with these children all week, and I have to keep, and at that moment, I finally realized I am actually not qualified for this position, and someone else should probably do it. But at that point, it was too late. I had been hired, and normally what I do in those kind of situations, and my guess is what any good young person does when they get into trouble, call your parents, like, and have them help you. But they had already told me that I was not where I should be. So I couldn't call them, and I was going to, like, sometimes you tell your boss that maybe you're in the wrong place, but Brandon was my boss, and he had also already told me that this was not where I should be. And so, unfortunately, where I should have went first is where I went third. I started praying. I said, God, I don't know what to do. I mean, I had a plan, but when I saw all those kids, I wasn't sure that my plan was going to be sufficient. So I prayed a lot, and I said, God, I don't actually know what I'm doing. You probably already knew that also, but here I am, so what can I do? And that night, as I was up late trying to figure out what to do, I came across this verse. In 2 Corinthians 12:9, it says, my grace is all you need. My power is sufficient in your weakness. And when you are weak, I am strong. And I said, well, I'm weak right now, but I have come to realize that program directors, the two main characteristics they should have, they should be very creative, I'm not really, and they should be able to sing, which you've just experienced. I also don't do that well. So I feel like, God, why did you bring me here to this place where, and I'm like a relatively independent, smart, strong, I felt, that kind of person, but here I was in my weaknesses, and this is the beginning of my journey to understand how do we live in both, right? And how do we use our weaknesses? I mean, a few things up here while we're talking. How do we use our weaknesses and our strength in the same place, right? How do you be a program director and lead kids to Jesus when you don't actually know how to do that, right? Like, and I think God gives us gifts that we should use, and he also leaves us hanging sometimes, not in a way that is bad, but in a way that requires us to rely on him. And I relied on God a lot that summer. And I had to learn so much that first summer, but the lesson of strength and God's strength in my weakness was what sticks out to me and continues to happen every summer. I think I have figured out something new comes up. So I went back to camp for a second summer. I felt pretty confident that I knew what was happening and I could do this again. And the second summer, it was supposed to just be a one summer gig in between 2 years of graduate school. But I thought, you know, I already have a job lined up for the fall. I'll just go back to camp for a second summer. And that would be my last summer at camp. This was in 2006. Second summer, I go back and I was ready to play games and talk about God. And I felt like I was getting better at that. And the second week of that summer, a little boy comes in to the registration line. And his dad is kind of gruff, and as he's leaving, he says, be good. I'll be back on Friday. I said, oh, dear. So I was trying to, like, break the ice a little bit. Hey, how's it going, buddy? Like, what's your name? Mark, with a C. I was like, okay, Mark with a C. Great. Welcome to camp. I'm glad you're, I don't know if you're here. Okay. Well, you're here. Your dad just walked out, so let's make the best of it, shall we? And so Mark with a C was, like, pretty removed, wasn't really interested in a lot of the camp stuff, and it took a while to warm up. He was trying to play the tough guy role. He was 10, maybe 11, but when you looked at him, you could see in his eyes, like, something more was going on. There was sadness, there was, like, confusion, but he was a tough guy, Mark, we could see. Well, by Wednesday, Mark finally started warming up a little bit. When you roll out a large piece of plastic and put soap over someone and they tell them they can go flying down a hill, they start to warm up a little bit more. So usually by Wednesday, we like get them in. So by Wednesday night, Mark with a C, I was leading the firesides that week, and oftentimes what I'll do is have kids, I'll kind of feed them the lines and we'll act out the Bible story and they get to interact. It's a small week, there's maybe 20 or 25 kids there in the whole camp. And so by Wednesday night, I asked for a volunteer to be Joshua. We were talking about Joshua in the Battle of Jericho. And I asked someone to be Joshua, and Mark's hand shoots up. And I'm like, oh, perfect, I'm going to involve him. So Mark with a C comes up and plays Joshua, and we're going through the skit, yada yada. And I was playing God, which I try not to do anymore. But for that particular skit at that time, I was playing God, and I was reading Mark his lines. And it came to the point when God tells Joshua to just walk around the wall, right? And it will come down. So I tell Mark, okay, this is what you do. You take your army, you walk around the wall 7 times, right? And the wall will come down. So what he's supposed to then do is go and walk around the wall. But Mark with the C looks back at me and says, that won't work. I said, this is what you do. You walk around the wall. I'm not. He's like, seriously, like, I need a better plan. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is what we have to do. Everyone's waiting. Our wall was made up of campers and stand piles on top of each other. So that wall was coming down one way or another very soon. And I said, I'm sorry that you don't make a plan, but this is how the story goes. And finally, he's like, this, like, as I'm thinking, this is not going to work. I was like, seriously, man, just walk around the wall or sit down. So Mark finally takes his army, and you can tell he was looking for guns or he was looking for something, you know, that would actually work. And so he walks around the wall, and right on cue, the wall comes tumbling down, and Mark looks back at me and just in amazement. And I was like, oh my gosh, this kid does not know the story. The story that I have known for my entire life and have built part of my life on. This kid has never heard me. He's 10 years old. And so in that moment, I was struck with, wow, like, here we are at this Christian camp, right, where we teach kids about Jesus. And this kid, Mark, has no experience of faith, right? It's not what he grew up with. It's not what he knows about. And here he is having that with me and a bunch of college-age staff, but this is all we know, right? This is where we have grown up with. We don't remember a time not knowing these stories. And Mark's on the other end of the spectrum. He's never heard it, any of them, right? So I was like, well, this is great. We can do all kinds of skits. Like, this will be awesome. And so Mark with the C that summer taught me that in God's kingdom, it doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't matter what you know. But you do have to be ready to listen. And sometimes you'll say back to God, that's not a good plan. I can't do that, right? Like, and God keeps saying, this is what I'm asking you to do. This is what I'm asking you to do. So that story stays with me, and I think about that just about every summer before camp gets started. And I can tell, man, I can tell you lots and lots of stories today about similar situations. But to summarize, Mark with the C is not super uncommon at camp. Each summer, there's a whole spectrum. Some kids know a lot, and some kids know a little. And there's also interesting dynamics between kids that come from really different places, right? So there's these kids that, one time someone was at camp, and they went to the town of Rutland, and they came back, and they said, that reminded me a little bit of going to Appalachia in, down, where is Appalachia? Kentucky. And there's a lot of poverty in Vermont. A lot of the kids that come are on free and reduced price lunch for school, and they pay about $50, if that, to be there for the week. Or probably about 30% of our kids come from social services agencies. And on the flip side of that, there's kids that live in Woodstock, Vermont, in a $1 million house. Like, I don't want to go visit because I've not been in a house that cost that much money, right? And Woodstock's a very wealthy town. There's lots of wealth there. And in the same week, a kid that doesn't know where he's going to live when school starts bumps up with a kid that lives in the house in Woodstock, and they become friends. And again, I'm struck with the idea that there's room for both. There's room for both ends of this. There's also kids, there's one summer, I won't go into the details of the story, but there's one summer when there's a girl who's coming from a really stable home. It wasn't a Christian home. Her parents had had bad experience with church, but were happy to have her kid come to church camp and once in the summer and once in the winter, and they felt like that was a good faith exposure. But it was a really solid house. They, two parents, a dog, they might even have a fence. I'm not sure, but it was a stable place, right? So there's some kids from camp that are coming from that place. And then there's the other kids, right? There's the girl coming from this house, roomed with a girl who came to camp. It was horrible. Her dad came and literally reeked of alcohol. Like, yeah. And he dropped her off 2 hours early. And she's a sweet, sweet girl. But she came to camp in the summer and told us about her mom and how she, you know, left her dad for another woman and all these crazy stories. And this girl is looking at her like, Actually, I'm looking at it like, we're all like, oh my gosh, you know. And by the end of the week, we spent a lot of time with our counselors about how can you guide conversations and lead conversations and be present. At the end of the week, I get a phone call from this girl's mom saying, thank you. For what? Thank you for giving my daughter a safe place to experience people she doesn't normally experience. She wants to now, she has some ways that we can help them. You guys are miracle workers. It's not us. It's God. So whoever it is, I'm so glad for it. So we have this, more room for growth. Right? So here we go. And this keeps happening and happening. And I'm reminded of Jesus and his life. And when we look at the Bible, we see Jesus walking the earth and hanging out with who? Right? He saw the political leaders and healed their son. One of the political leader's sons, right? And then he invited the woman at the well to know him and have true life, right? And he had this ragtag team of disciples following him. And in the same breath, he associated with the Pharisees, who were like the religious people of the time. And so I'm struck with, in Jesus' life, there's room for growth. And so it must be that in ours there can be as well. So again, I could share lots of stories about how this plays out in camp and how this goes. But I want to share just one more from my own life. So I had done camp for a few summers and it was really fun. And a few summers ago, I started thinking, this is like really what I'm doing. I have a Master's of Science in Education. I was hoping to be an athletic trainer for a Division I program, which I did, and then left to come to camp. And I started to wonder, I love to play games and talk about God, but like, is that what I'm doing? Like, so God and I are having this conversation. I can keep doing this if you want, but I'm starting to feel just a little bit, I hate that word, bored. I remember my mom hates that word, and I said, Mom, I'm so bored. She would go outside or something, you know? And I hate to be bored. I took the train down, and I was like worried about being bored on the train. So I like packed all these things in my bag, and I wasn't bored at all. It was a beautiful train ride. But I was worried about being bored. And so, but again, I don't like to like think about the things I don't like. I would rather like recklessly pursue the others. So I started to try to get excited about things that weren't actually that exciting. And I was like, Brandon's like, that's not exciting. what are you talking about? And I said, well, I think I'm getting bored. And he said, oh, no. And so we talked about it a little bit. I talked to a few other people, and I prayed a lot about it. I said, you know what? I don't want to be bored. This might be what I'm feeling, but I'd rather be excited. And I was trying to figure out how is there room for both boredom and, like, stimulation, right? That's what I would like to have. It wasn't that camp wasn't so fun. It was still really great, but I was just getting, like, I had done it a lot. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to do another summer, and I'm going to, like, pay really close attention. Am I bored or am I not bored? And if I'm bored at the end of this, I'm going to be done. You know, I'm going to move on. And the very first week of that summer, it was super rainy. We had 10-year-olds who were scared of the thunder and lightning. Kids were getting, it was just really rainy, and we cook our meals outside over the fire, so when it's really rainy, it's hard to deal with. Vermont gets a lot of rain. Our pavilion, there's like a river that runs through it when it starts to rain, so it just gets a little stressful. And there was a counselor there who, all during orientation, super confident, knew what she was doing, and she came in, I've got this, right? She'd never counseled before. I don't think she'd gone camping before, right? She ate in her college cafeteria, she didn't know how to cook, but yet she was like very, very confident. And this rough week, I kind of make rounds the first week and go see how people are doing. And every time I went to her cabin, she was fine. Things like weren't really happening as they should, but she was fine and did not need any help from me, which was good. Because one time I went to help her start a fire, which I'm not actually very good at, so then one of my weaknesses. And so she assured me she needed any help, and I think they ate cold something that night. But so she didn't need any help, and finally on Friday, she doesn't show up to staff meeting. We have staff meeting in the morning, and she doesn't really come, and I was like, oh no, like where is this counselor? And I go out after staff meeting, and she's like still brushing her teeth and looking for a child. Like you can tell in her eyes, like there's someone missing in her group. And I was like, are you okay? She like still brushing her teeth, nodding her head yes. I was like, okay, like well, like, you missed that meeting, and I go, like, it's a director mode, you missed that meeting, like, where are children, da, da, and she just starts crying, like, crying, and I would say compassion is not my strong point, and tears, I don't always know what to do with, and she's just bawling, and I was like, okay, what do you need, like, do you want to talk, do you need some time, she's like, I said, okay. So I said, why don't you go do what you need to do? Spend some time, take a few minutes, and meet me by the rock. You know, there's a rock behind the pavilion. And so as I go, I get her camera situated and put them with other people. And as I go to the rock and sit there and wait for her, I realize I'm going to be anything but bored this summer. That summer was like a new place for me in understanding how I can not only play games and talk about God with kids, but how I can be a mentor to the young adults that are here, trying to learn the same thing. So she came to the rock, and we talked about my first summer when, like, she said, I can do things. I get good grades in school. I am successful. I said, you're not at school anymore. Like, you know, I shared her my first summer of strength and weaknesses, and she said, but why isn't this happening in real life? Why does this happen to me in real life? Why did this happen to me in real life? And I said, well, I wonder, and we talked a little about that, and I left wondering, how often do we experience real life, right? Like, how often do we live into this idea of strength and weaknesses, right? Or of poverty and wealth, or of boredom and not an excitement, right? How often do we live in the middle of fear and not being afraid, courage. How often do we do that? And I was struck that it happens all the time at camp. And I was just thinking about this and thinking, this is what I want to share. I want to share that there's room for both. But when you see both happen, not at camp, when I see it in my weird politic things, or I see it on the street or somewhere, I think, why doesn't it work there, right? Why can't people come together in these other places? And I'm struck with the fact that God is not there, right? Like, God is at camp. You don't have to be at camp for very long to feel that and to see that. And I'm struck with that camp that God is there. And I think when we see these ends of the spectrum or experience them together, that is where we can meet Jesus. And there's another place right now, or there's another thing happening at camp right now that is also demonstrating this idea of both. We want kids to experience God more. We want them to come back in the winter, and we want them, when it rains, to not hate camp in the summer. And so, actually, they don't hate camp. I hate camp when it rains in the summer. Kids, I don't think they notice. Their parents definitely notice. So we have this building. Right now, the one on the bottom is our current pavilion. We have nice plastic walls for it when it rains. And what camp is trying to do right now is build a new building, right? And so nothing else at camp is new. It's all pretty old. And we're going to have this new building, which we're very excited about. We're also going to try to maintain some sense of rusticness, which we will do because we'll still swim in the pond, kids will still sleep on the floor and do the bath and things like that. We're going to have this new kitchen, which many of our cooks are very excited about because our current kitchen is not that great. And we're going to have more space than we've had before under a roof. And we're going to also have to change some things. So I studied the program, I've been there for 9 years, and we do a lot of the same things every summer, which a lot of kids love. But yet, in this new space, maybe there will be new things that we do. So here I am. Oftentimes, Brandon is talking about this pavilion project and what's going on, and I give my 2 cents. But for the most part, I just do the programming. And so whenever this comes up, I think, oh my gosh, here's another opportunity for both, right? We're also going to need money, which we don't notoriously have very much of. And so here's another opportunity. Where is this money going to come from? And it's been amazing to see how God has provided in various ways. So just another example of at camp, how both is present. And so I am realizing that God is asking me to just sit in the midst of both and keep my eyes on him and know that he is present. And I have experienced that, and I know that to be true. But again, holding the opposing ideas is very hard. How do you hold this whole spectrum together? How do you live a life that where both are included? Maybe there's things in your life right now that you're thinking, like perhaps you're thinking, oh, I would love to give all of my life savings to this pavilion project, but I have bills to pay, so I can't really do that. So there's like an example of both. But what I think is important, whatever your both is, you must have Jesus, right? You must have Jesus to help you. Let me see how this goes here. Obviously, these great ideas that I don't practice at the time. I just hope the Spirit moves. So Marie's going to help you to shut down. So you have all of these things on a spectrum, right? And you're trying to figure out how do they fit together. Sometimes they don't.
Which is maybe the illustration I should make.
This went much differently. But somehow we hold all of these things together so that they teach us something, right? And the only thing that can hold them together is God, right? So I think when we experience both, when we put all these things that are happening in our lives, these different people we meet, these different situations we find ourselves in, and we want to run recklessly towards the one that's more comfortable, instead we sit and we wait in both. And Jesus makes himself present there. Yeah. So hopefully me holding this string up here will stick with you for a little while. And I want to leave you, last thing I want to say is leave you with one verse that has been very meaningful to me as I sit with this idea of both. You can ask my mom, I agonize over decisions. Agonize. Like, where to go to graduate school? What to do? And call mom, so what should I do? And she would tell me, and I would promptly do the opposite. And I would read this verse a lot, and I would get stuck on here, but do I go to the right or to the left? Right? I need to know. Do I go right or do I go left? That's what I want to know, God. And instead, God says, whether you turn to the right or whether you turn to the left, you will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. So as we have right and left, I'm not always convinced that sometimes you have to choose. I'm not convinced that we have to choose as often as we think we do. Instead, we just need to hear the voice behind us. We just need to hear God behind us say, this is the way, walk in. And so my hope and my prayer for you today is that as you sit with things that are on different ends of the spectrum, or however you want to say, that you can sit with both, right? And that you can hear God behind you saying, this is the way, walk in. And that then he gives you the courage to walk. That's tough for only the time getting the courage to walk. So thank you. That's what I have to say. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening about camp. And thanks for inviting me to speak. I was very excited and scared to be here.